on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to sound really super cheesy, but I'm going to riff on it because it's really what hits me over and over again. Tarot is the poetry of our soul. Okay, it's like the song lyrics of the universe that come in and through us. You know, what does poetry do? What does music do when we expose ourselves to it? Somehow it shifts our sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. It opens our heart. It helps us think about our lives and our experiences differently. And it moves us. Like, I feel like tarot is like those whispers, you know, to our soul from the universe. Like, it's okay. This is human nature. You got this.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author Shanda Parkinson to discuss her book, Meditation in Tarot. Shanda and I discuss how the symbols in tarot are reflections of our psyche, making the cards a psychological tool, the value of embracing ambiguity, the virtues expressed in the cards, the importance of building a relationship with the cards, and how journaling can help us in that endeavor. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Shanda Parkinson's rather eclectic background and passions include the arts and music, professional work in the nonprofit sector, owning and operating several businesses, volunteering as a social justice and human rights advocate, and mothering three children. An early life interest in Christian theological studies expanded to include astrology, tarot, Celtic shamanism, folk magic, and witchcraft, which she continues to devour with great fervor. She has been a student and practitioner of psychic development since the late 1990s. Shanda has been a professional psychic intuitive, tarot reader, astrologist, and spiritual teacher since 2006. Her greatest joy is witnessing others discovering and stepping into their own natural spiritual gifts. She is the author of Meditation and Psychic Development. She joins me today to discuss her latest book, Meditation and Tarot. Shanda, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Ah, thank you. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I always enjoy talking about tarot. I've been reading tarot myself since I was 16. So, you know, about 10 years or so.
Wow.
it's been a long time. But let me ask you, what led you to tarot?
Oh, wow. I, you know, didn't have any fascination with anything in the occult. This was a purely accidental find. And also, I like to say that sometimes circumstances breed necessity. So let's just say, like, I was at a time in my life when it was ripe for me to find this tool. And so I was literally at a party one night, and somebody at the party said, "Who wants a tarot reading?" After a few glasses of wine, you know, you can be open to pretty much anything. And I was, you know, I wasn't too sure about it, but I sat down with her. She asked me to ask a couple questions. She drew cards. There, you know, the things she said about me and what was going on in my life was pretty astounding. Coming from a stranger, somebody who didn't know me very well at the time. And so it didn't leave me. I couldn't shake it. A couple days passed and I raced to Barnes and Noble to see if I could find myself a tarot deck, and he like just devoured that. And so it was like, also I was going through a lot of things, like transitional things, being really unclear about my life path, and also having kind of a hard time understanding myself. And so I just like dove in to tarot and in a really like messy, awkward fashion, not like in a super like constructive fashion. It was, you know, it was the 90s. At that time, you couldn't hop online and take a class, you know, right. So I had to figure it out. I had to sort it out, figure out what kinds of, luckily I had a couple friends who were an astrologist and a tarot reader at the time, and they took me under their wing, and I give them credit in my book dedication, my tarot book, because they've both since passed on, but like they were the lighthouses for me to go, what are these tools? What is this thing that is happening to me, and how do I understand it? So yeah, it just took off from there. That was really like the tarot is the cornerstone or foundation of my practice for sure. And always will be. Yeah.
Do you remember, you know, you were at this party and someone's like, hey, do you want a reading? What exposure had you had prior to that to tarot? What was your kind of understanding?
Other than, you know, really scary, spooky things in the media and movie, you know, how it was portrayed.
Right.
Fortune tellers wearing dark clothing in a foreboding dark, you know, side street room. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't good.
Right. Yeah. I think that my first, the first exposure I can remember was, I think it was the old Lon Chaney Wolfman movie, where I think there was a Romani woman who was reading tarot cards. And I think that was my very first exposure. But, you know, I knew about them, but then I was at a mall because, you know, this was back in the 80s. Everyone was at the mall. And one of the bookstores, they had the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. And that was the first time that it was available. So I snatched that up right away. So, yeah.
So before that, it wasn't available in the stores? Like before that, like that was the first time it was. I'm just sorry. I'm so fascinated.
Well, not in my hometown. Okay. Not in my hometown. No. The mall was in a larger city, and I think it was the old chain Walden Books or something like that, which is like the equivalent today of Barnes & Noble. But there wasn't at that time, at least not in my hometown, anything kind of like metaphysical stores or anything like that. The library had a small section of like paranormal things. Yeah. And I may have read about tarot in some of those books because I think I read all of those books. I was probably the only one. Yeah, it was an interesting journey for myself as well. But let me ask you, you had this early interest in Christian theological studies. And there is a wrong kind of opinion by some people, especially coming from the Christian practice and beliefs, that tarot is bad. How did you find a way to reconcile that and connect the Christian theology to tarot?
Oh my God. I don't think we can cover this in an hour, but you know what? I'll do my best. It's one of my favorite things to talk about because I left the Midwest for Boston. I had family members pass away within a short time of being disconnected from my family in the Midwest. And let's just say it kind of set me on a truth-seeking mission about what happens to us, you know, when we cross over. And to be honest, I was pissed. You know, I was angry. I was like, I was told lies. What happens to us when we die? I wasn't willing to believe. It was just like there with God or whatever. And I had an incredibly tight relationship with my church family and community growing up in the Midwest as a Lutheran and in a pretty conservative community. But I found some type of spiritual release at church and having conversations with the pastors about things that were super meaningful to me. So it was like spirituality was lingering around me at that point. And so I feel like a part of my anger was also like being misinformed or having a deep misunderstanding and disconnect about the Bible as sort of like a metaphysical tool. And that didn't come until years later of like my disconnect from the church, like pushing it out of my life, like, you know, Christianity, blah, bad, whatever. For a period of time, I had to like really distance and separate myself from it so I could come back to my roots and my origin in the way that made sense to me, that I could make peace with. And when I discovered that, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm gonna swear, holy shit, like the Bible is like a metaphysical book of stories where like there were prophets, they were, you know, they were on psychedelics. Why do you think, you know, there were things coming through the Bible in the stories that were like spiritual visions, just like the rest of us. And there are astrological references in the Bible. Like I started to make a ton of peace with it. And And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that. So like the stories that are, you know, referenced as images in the tarot, you know, judgment, mm-hmm. for example, you know, and some of those references in the Adam and Eve story and the lovers or the Garden of Eden, you know, I've made a ton of, been able to make a ton of peace because of my expanded sort of perspective, you know, right. like it can live at the same time as all of the rest of the things that have touched my life, that have built my character, that I've learned from, that I've embraced and opened mm-hmm. my heart to. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's very powerful. And I think a lot of people don't understand that there is a lot of Christian symbolism in the tarot. And you mentioned, you know, like the Adam and Eve are there mm-hmm. in the lover's card. And when I'm kind of referring just to the Rider-Waite-Smith deck at the moment,
yes.
because that's the one that's right. the most well-known. But it's also in the devil card. And like you said, there's the judgment. You know, it's rife with Christian symbolism. But, and I'm going to ask you this big question, because I think this is maybe the appropriate time to ask, because I think there is this perception by people in a faith perspective that there's something evil working through the tarot or, you know, managing it. And so I'm curious how you think tarot works.
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to sound really super cheesy, but I'm going to riff on it because
okay,
it's really what hits me over and mm-hmm. over again. Tarot is the poetry of our soul.
Mm.
Okay. It's like the song lyrics of the universe that come in and through us. You know, what does poetry do? What does music do when we expose ourselves to it? Somehow it shifts our sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. It opens our heart. It helps us think about our lives and our experiences differently. And it moves us. Like, I feel like tarot is like those whispers, you know, to our soul from the universe. Like, it's okay. This is human nature. You got this. Mm. You're going through a really shitty moment. It's going to pass. It's okay. You got this. Here's how you can move through it. Like that sense of guidance and ever-present, steady prose. that we can access in a little deck of 78 cards, which, by the way, are individual pieces of art, mm-hmm. you know? So I have a deep appreciation in my background as an artist and actor and musician. And so that's how I believe. I mean, I believe it's like poetry. It's like mm-hmm. a love letter, you know, mm-hmm. from the universe that we get to open and experience. And yeah, are there difficult things to face? Well, yeah, poetry and music isn't always corns and rainbows and, you know, cotton candy moments. Sometimes it's brutal. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's painful, but it reveals the deepest core of our human nature and can help us arrange our thoughts and our experiences. You know, I have 7 planets in my astrology chart in air signs, but 4 in Gemini. And so you can imagine if I'm not careful, my mind can race and I can go down the rabbit hole in lots of really fascinating ways. And so I use it as a tool to organize my thoughts, mm-hmm. you know, to help me understand even what I'm thinking or what my options are. So that collaboration and that coordination on a esoteric and a metaphysical level is like key to me. You know, that's gold right there. That's a gift. I think that's why tarot has been with us for so long. I mean, why else would we keep coming back to this seemingly random thing? It just doesn't, it's never felt random to me at all.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple of things I want to kind of dig into with what you just said. I love the idea that it's the poetry of our soul. I think that's beautifully stated. I tend to think of tarot as just being archetypal. And, you know, our archetypes do connect to the soul. I think that's the value of the work of Carl Jung, as he returns soul to psychology. You know, it's like, hey, we forgot about the psyche here. And the way I always explain it to people when I do readings for them is that it is not any kind of spirit or anything speaking through the cards, although it sounds to me like you're suggesting almost like the spirit of the universe is speaking through the cards. But I just say it's, you know, synchronicity. If it has meaning for you, it has meaning for you. And if it doesn't, you know, no harm. But it seems to me that you would, because you talk about the fool's journey and along those lines. And I think that's something that a lot of people are familiar with archetypally, because it is also the fool's journey is the hero's journey.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So bear with me a moment. My brain just went blank.
No, that's okay. Yeah, to I'll, riff on what you just said, though, like the fool's journey or the hero's journey, like we can identify with each of the beats and the steps. It's like why the major arcana to me is so fascinating to study and sit with, because if you spend enough time with each of those cards as like a study exercise or a meditation exercise, you see yourself. It's just reflections of our psyche. You know, they're reflections of parts of us that are human nature. Yeah. So, oh my gosh. And so like this, the journey that we go through as human beings is no different than the fool's journey. And our lives are filled with human beings. Our lives are filled with, yes, new beginnings and yes, magic and pain and struggle and a need to consult, gain advice, wisdom, moments of retreating, you know, through the hermit, you know, and disruption like the tower. Like we all encounter those. So yeah, no, the fool's journey is, it's a brilliant, I mean, it's just a brilliantly constructed tool. I can go on and on about it, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and I do want you to go on and on about it. but, you know, the other way that I like to think about tarot, and I think that this gets into your notion that it's a tool, because I really do want to ask you, well, what do you mean by that? But, you know, it's an oracle. And I always think in terms of the Oracle at Delphi in ancient Greece. And as you would enter into the sacred space, you know, it would say, know thyself. And that's what I always say, is that that's the purpose of the oracle, that it's not just fortune telling, but it's about self-knowledge.
Yes, self-knowledge. And I know your background is in philosophy. So like to what existential ends, you know, or what is the, like, what is the, you know, the dilemma existentially we face sometimes when we go into the tarot, like, yeah, it's a process to know thyself, but to me, to know thyself so that you can come back into the world to engage with the world, to be in the world. So like, you know, my personal philosophy isn't just about like, I just want me, myself, I. It's also we, it's also, and it's also then how can that help me better, you know, show up in my, you know, in my fullest expression here. And so but that being said, taking the moments with a tool, yes, like a, like tarot, I feel helps us do that. It helps us really be able to show up and dissect and understand and heal. And
yeah. Well, my background's also religious studies. I'm actually way more interested in that than the philosophy. I have a love-hate relationship with philosophy. It's important, but it's also Yeah. Well, and I like the, you know, one of the things that I've often pondered, because I've used tarot pretty specifically for sometimes big questions. I'll give you a very quick example. I had been in California for 18 years. And I was pretty much, I was miserable before I left. And there was just, you know, one person really that was keeping me there. And I was really torn about whether or not to leave. So late one night, it was like actually 1 o'clock in the morning or something, I took my favorite deck and I just asked, should I go or should I stay? And I pulled the Chariot.
Ooh.
You know, and so now I'm, you know, recording this in Denver. So I did leave. But it was this, you know, but I've pondered this question of making big life choices just based on pulling a card.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And that is a question I get asked a ton. You know, like, From my students, I teach tarot classes. And so that is one of the, the number one questions that comes up is, how do I know this is like, you know, a good course of action for me? And I have an interesting and kind of more intricate or complex way to answer that question, in that, like, there is still free will as human beings. You know, we use the tarot to, I feel like it's to help shake whatever might be stuck in our minds that can set us free to come into alignment with our soul, you know? And so when we can shake all of that free, again, poetry or music lyrics, to come into contact with or alignment with our soul, something can open that might feel more natural as like, you know, oop, no, I'm out of here. I'm moving to Denver. This is enough. My soul just whispered to me, right, or something came from. So, but also, there's a level of discernment that I advise bringing to a tarot practice. So like anything in life, your friend gives you advice. Do you just take that and run with it? No, you probably sit and mull about and see how it feels and sit with it a bit. If a parent or a mentor or somebody you look up to gives you a level of advice, do you look, you know, is that the advice you take? And so I feel like it's another level of that, like to add into all of the other ways in which we make decisions. It's not just like the only, you know, definitive,
right,
guiding force, you know. But I love tapping into the unknown. I think that's what this tool allows us to do. It affords us a chance to just have access to something magical, rich, pure. And add it to the mix.
Yeah.
But then also there are times where I do ask a question. I'm trying to think of an example right now, and it's very sobering. You know what I see? Like, is this good for me?
Right,
I've decided to eat this whole chocolate cake. Is this really good for me? You know, as a practical tool, I'm probably not going to see. Or I'm going to see a mixture of cards. Or is that going to make me eat the chocolate cake or not eat the chocolate cake? I don't know. You know, so I feel like there's so much, if you allow this to be a flexible tool, something that can enrich and add to the ways in which you approach your life, not act as necessarily like a replacement or a crutch. Yeah, for. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And I agree with that, because in my pulling of the Chariot card, you know, I've been talking to friends and mulling things over and looking at my life and really examining it. And so that card was confirmation.
Confirmation, you know,
it wasn't just the card that led me away or led me back to Colorado. You know, there were a lot of other forces, but the confirmation was necessary.
Oh, totally. Affirmation, validation. Oftentimes, I think tarot can bring that so beautifully. Like, I've already been feeling and thinking this. I just needed a thing to, like, tie up any loose ends around my internal struggle on a thing. Yeah, that's a great card to draw.
Yeah.
And I love that tarot just doesn't like mess around, you know, it can often.
Yeah. Sometimes I find that the cards can be ambiguous. And I know that some readers will say, you know, you can actually get a little bit more clarity if you use reversals. And I don't tend to use reversals sometimes, but there can be ambiguity in the cards.
Yeah. Oh, I love ambiguity. I'm all about it. As a Gemini, I mean, are you kidding me? Indecisiveness is my middle name. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, like a tool that actually does, like, if I feel like an approach, this is the philosophy of approach to the tarot is like really embracing ambiguity. Like, as human beings, we have a need for control. Like, there's this idea that, like, well, if I can get it all figured out, I can make the plan, I'm going to feel a sense of control, which we know is really arbitrary anyway. Everything will work itself out if I just can control it. And I feel like there are moments in tarot, not to get too deep with it, but that ambiguity is really the best, you know, outcome. To be ambiguous, because maybe it's not the moment to actually make a decision, or your tarot reading honestly sucks because you can't interpret what it's saying, or you've got cards that are complete contrast I've drawn the star card and I've also drawn the tower card. Now, which one is it?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, sit with that. Sit with it. It's okay. Back up. I don't read reversal. I don't either, just because I'm such a practical person, and I also teach tarot without reversals. I need it to be a practical tool that people won't run from, you know, when they start to use it. So, like, can reversals come in later if, like, you develop a comfort with reading tarot? Yeah, add them in later and see if you like it. But yeah. I feel like my arrangement with my deck is, hey, let's just give me the cards straight up. Like, I don't need to have it the opposite meaning of a certain thing. And I know that, oh my gosh, there are tarot readers who are like cringing listening to this right now, who are like, no, that's not too bright. But yeah, reversals can really make things a little bit complicated. And so, especially for beginners in particular, I really advocate for just like, keep your practice really simple when you're first learning. It's okay if you want to add reversals, but it is not essential. And your tarot practice is yours.
Right.
You can decide.
Yeah. I always just kind of assumed that whatever you get from a reversed card, you can get the same message from an upright card, that the deck has everything already.
Yeah.
And so if I use reversals, and sometimes if I'm reading for someone, you know, I'll have them shuffle the deck and whatnot. Mm-hmm. That's usually where the reversals come in, is how they've shuffled. Mm-hmm. And I'll just look at it as like, okay, well, this is where maybe that energy is blocked somehow. Instead of having like the opposite meaning, I just say, okay, it's kind of blocked, you know, and then we have to get the energy flowing that way. But yes, I'm sure that there are a lot of people cringing at this discussion right now. But let's talk about the practice a little bit, because I do want to ask about the meditation. So yeah, let's, I guess the way to ask this is, first, where does meditation fit into the practice?
Yes. To me, entering a practice, any practice, and especially tarot, but like any practice that sort of like accesses realms of the unknown and the subtle energy field, or opens us up to influences, I'm like, let's set the right conditions in place so that you can enter this with, number one, safety, because I'm big into, like, not that something can come through the tarot card that's negative to get you, but like, you know, everything is energy around us. So let's set it up well so that, number one, you feel safe. Number two, you are grounded. Number three, you are protected. And number four, then you can really feel free to explore. And also putting ourselves in our biorhythms in a really smooth space can continue to help us open our inner vision, our inner eye, our inner hearing, our inner feeling, our inner knowing. So for me, from the very beginning, and that's why I wrote Meditations for Psychic Development too, was just needing a method or a format within which to function. If you're a solo person, a solo practitioner, and you want ways to explore this, I want you to do it like comprehensively and with great care. And so that was the first thing, was for me, was safety. But then it just was also like, oh my gosh, there are amazing ways to interact with these cards that have nothing to do with like prior interpretations, you know, set forth by other tarot experts. And so where do you come in through to the tarot? What other methods or techniques can you use? And I found over the course of time, for me personally, it was meditation. It was meditation. Entering the card, joining the story of the card to get to know the characters, which sounds crazy and woo-woo, but it's like really super effective. Walking around in the cards with the characters in a meditation can really help you access a whole other realm of information you might not have had. So to me, meditation, first and foremost, is just simply about setting the right conditions to access what the cards have to offer.
Yeah.
It's so, not mandatory. Some people don't want to do that. But.
Yeah. Well, I find it helpful to have a bit of a ritual and to ground before approaching the cards, just to give it that kind of sacredness, you know, I suppose. Yeah. But I loved some of the ideas that you were just talking about. I was familiar before. The only meditation with tarot that I was familiar with was the one that you just kind of described with going into the card. And it seems to me that this is a really good way to learn how to work with tarot versus trying to memorize, you know, first the little white book and then maybe other books, right? That this is really the getting at the heart of how one learns tarot.
Well, this is how I teach beginners. So when I teach tons and tons of community ed classes and I coach people one-on-one too, or teach private classes. And I actually just, the very first thing out of my mouth is put all your books on the shelf for now. For the next few months, you're just going to be developing a relationship with your cards, opening your intuition, setting the conditions to get to know these cards, because the wisdom lives within us somewhere. Like, this is a tool that's been around for a very long time. And so we all have had some type of maybe subconscious interaction, whether through past lives or this life or religious, whatever upbringing. And so I want people to access that naturally and also ignite intuition through the tarot first and build a relationship and then start to add the left brain stuff. Because I'm just as intellectual and left-brained as the next person. And that's why I think I love tarot so much, because I can study and I can learn about it. But I have to keep coming back. Like, I feel like when I do come back to meditative exercises, guided visualizations, sitting with the cards and wrestling with them on my insides a little bit, I get way more out of them. A more understanding and clarity about who I am and how the cards are actually speaking to me. Yeah.
Well, and I find that really interesting. I'm trying to find something here that you wrote. And I don't know if I can find it. I did actually have this down, so I'll try to paraphrase it. But you wrote that when you start doing this, that tarot starts showing up in your life in different ways, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could maybe speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah. Tarot showing up in different ways, I feel, happens in a number of different ways. Sometimes it's the symbolism of the tarot can actually, once you draw cards and then suddenly the symbols are showing up, you know, there's a little red bird in one of the cards and all of a sudden you see a red bird on your tree when you walk outside. There is a really spooky, interesting, and awesome connection somehow between how working with the tarot can actually help us coordinate even events, life circumstances, and bring things together, like interweave the actual events of our lives. This. And so I've just noticed throughout the years reading tarot, I'll read cards, I'll be a little perplexed about them, and then suddenly something will happen in my life and it brings that reading right back to me. Not as like a predictive thing, but like, oh, geez, that's what the cards were trying to say. Like, this thing was happening, a health crisis. I could not get the tarot or the tower card out of my tarot readings. It was really freaking me out. Some of the other pentacles cards, which can connect to health issues, you know, and I'm like, what on earth is going on? And yeah, it's soon after that, I had a little bit of a health situation that I was in the midst of facing, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 those cards came back into my head. And also I remember drawing Temperance at the same time as I was drawing the Tower, and the Temperance, which was advocating for me, stay calm, stay cool, be patient with this process, it's okay, like, things are going to be okay. Just Temperance came back and it was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna get through this, things are gonna be okay. So, like, it can really become something that super integrates all the experiences and moments of your life as well. I don't like to give it all that power. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, but I still am still mystified after all these years at how magical it can interweave the experiences of my own life journey.
Yeah. Yeah, there's I've not been very good at it lately, and I'm not sure why, but for a long time I would draw a card every day. And I know I had another guest on prior, Susie Chang, and she kind of recommends the same thing, I think, that you do, is that, you know, like if you do the daily drawing, try to see how it manifests. And it may manifest in the life, just like you said, you know, like with the red bird. You know, it doesn't have to be like a tower collapsing or anything.
Yeah.
And it seems like when you start doing that, it makes the cards come alive.
Yeah,
it seems to me.
It does. They come alive. And something that you just said totally struck me, like, yeah, for example, let's say for an entire week, my daily card is the tower. Does that mean something that day is going to be catastrophic? No. Because the range of our experiences as human beings is incredibly vast. But could it be that there's something a little surprising or unsettling that might enter into my day? Whoops, I burned the toast. You know, could that have been a tower card moment? You know, because that's the only thing I can reflect. But you come back at the end of the day and reflect, and it's like, I almost started my house on fire. So maybe let's not do that. Right. So it can be, it doesn't have to be, but yeah, you're, it doesn't have to be catastrophic. It doesn't have to be these huge, huge things, but there are sweet moments and shifts that if you reflect as a meditation and reflection tool at the end of the day, heck yeah, I'm all about that. Then they do come to life. And then it becomes an extension of you. So that's the thing. And that's also part of why, like, engaging with them in ways that aren't just memorization, rote memorization, and getting your head in books, because you want it to be. Like, we want it to be an extension of us. That's how I feel about witchcraft too. My tools aren't the magic. I'm the magic. I'm the compass. I'm the one kind of orchestrating and coordinating all of this. And so it's me. And so I want my tools to be an extension of my magic and who I am. And so that in essence can really make it a powerful tool, tarot, to utilize.
Yeah,
powerful as in giving us something, and not powerful as in taking power from us.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and I think that once you start working with tarot and you get really comfortable with it, that you will start seeing some of the symbols in various places. But, you know, I've also had in dreams, I've had a couple times, and it's usually the stereotypical Romani woman who's sitting in a dark room, but she'll do a reading for me, you know, or there will be a specific tarot card. And it's like, wow, I just had a tarot reading in my dreams. But I always pay really close attention to those.
That is so cool. Do you remember them when you wake up?
Sometimes, yeah. It's been a very long time since that's happened. So I'd have to go back in my dream journals and see if I could find what they were. But it does happen on occasion, you know, because
there will be times I'm interacting with somebody, like seriously, either through a client session or in a conversation, and all of a sudden a tarot card will pop into my vision. And I have learned to trust that and follow that. It's like the Rolodex of tarot in my brain now, that I think it just that spirit or my highest good, higher self, or my intuition, my psychic skills, whatever you want to call it, uses to give me like something. And so that's how tight I've become with this deck is that like suddenly I'm seeing a card and it's like, and then I start saying something about it, and it's like, wow, that just fed this moment. And I didn't even have the deck out. I didn't even, I didn't draw the card. It's so, whether it's in dreams or whether something pops up in your waking life, it can serve in that way as well. When you build a relationship with it, it just becomes part of you.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense to me that, you know, once you kind of hone the intuition and marry it to these symbols, that they may just kind of pop up at those moments as signifiers of, hey, maybe this is something I want to pay attention to.
Yes. And like my students ask me all the time, like, how familiar do I need to get with all of the imagery, like the symbols in the tarot? And It's a tricky one to answer because I feel like it depends on, you got to understand why you're working with this to begin right. with. Like if you're just like, you are fascinated and you are an enthusiast and you want to buy as many decks as you can and you want to study all of the intricate details of the symbols because that's your passion, then go crazy. Like if you're someone who really wants this to be like a functional extension of your own like intuition, higher self, then let's forego needing to study the symbols because that can add a level of complexity and make your head swim when you're trying to understand what the meanings are. Like add in layers as you go. So I'm glad you said the word symbol because I'm, you know, I don't even for beginners advocate, like, let's just figure out what like a couple of keywords and the emotional impression that this card leaves with you,
right?
How it makes you feel, what it makes you think about. Don't worry about the rest. Build that in down the road. If you find you have a thirst for this tool, oh heck yeah, then let's dive into the symbols. You know, like Robert Place has some great books out about the symbolism in the tarot. But if you start there, you are kind of keeping yourself at an arm's length, you know, right. from it.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that you just said, and I was thinking about this, that I just wanted to state this, that because you mentioned, you know, if someone goes out and buys a tarot deck or several, that it's perfectly acceptable for people to buy their own decks.
Yes, it is. Yeah, contrary to some of the more popular opinions, it doesn't have to be good. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was told by a well-meaning friend of mine many, many years ago that you should never buy your own tarot decks. And I took that as gospel. And I ended up giving her husband the very first deck I had purchased, which I kind of wish I hadn't done. But I went years without a deck until I told a friend about this. And like a week later, a deck showed up on my doorstep. I think they felt bad because I'm like, I want another deck, but I can't go and buy my own. But then I gave myself permission, and now I've got way too many decks.
I relate to that.
Yeah. It's kind of habit forming. But and I like that a couple of things. I want to go back to kind of the symbols. But something else that you were just saying is the kind of the reflections. You have exercises in the book, especially about journaling. And I really liked that because you weren't taking the approach of just like drawing a card and seeing how it manifests, but you're asking really good questions about, okay, if you draw this card every day, what's the emotional response to it? And a few other things too. And I found that really helpful.
That's cool. Good. I'm glad you found it helpful. I find it helpful too.
Yeah.
And I've really grounded and rooted myself in, you know, the need to not get lost in all of the things that might be act as a bit of distraction when we're also working with the tarot or what's going on in our lives. And so in coordination with that, if you break it down, keep it super simple and ask yourself just a few different things when you draw a card. What is going on in my life right now? Why might I be drawing this card? Write it down. Just write it down. Why is a really intense card like the Tower showing up right now? Am I feeling out of sorts? Yep. Okay, I'm feeling out of sorts. And how does this card make me feel? And what is it informing me of? Like, is there, what's happening here? How can I use that information? It's just like data, you know? The tarot gives you data on an emotional level, on a spiritual level. Give yourself a chance to like write it down, because then when you go throughout your tarot practice and you come back to your journal, you've got a really nice foundation for how did I work with this card before? Oh yeah, I remember. That's how this card was. I was working with this card back in 2002. Now it's 2024, and I've built all of these impressions and imprints within me about how this card has worked with me through time. And so for tarot, people who are really super into and interested in working with tarot, I also advocate or advise, give it time. You know, don't expect that it's going to work for you immediately. You know, there is some time to like getting comfortable and coordinated with with it. Yeah. I took us on a tangent, but anyway.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. Well, you know, along these lines, you've mentioned tarot as a tool, and mm-hmm. we've kind of already stated that it's not just for fortune telling, that it's a tool for many other things. And I know that you discuss this in the book. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, what other functions does tarot serve other than self-knowledge or predicting the future? Because you don't really talk about its predictive tools at all in the book.
I don't, do I? No, I don't. Oh my gosh. Again, that's the practical side of my personality, yeah. I think, coming through for sure, because like it can be used. It is a divination tool, so we can get glimpses of future outcomes. I just feel like as a starting point, I'm really good with people who are like at the beginning of their journey with a certain tool, to take great care to learn about it, to not jump to the point where you're trying to use it as a tool for telling futures, but instead get really super acclimated with how to build a relationship with it first. And I feel like it, first and foremost, is a psychological tool, which to me means like it reflects back to us something about what might be going on inside of us at the moment we're in, you know? So it helps us get to know ourselves, like you said, but also it helps us understand really what we might be thinking or feeling or going through that can inform our healing path, our life decisions. Drawing tarot cards for a particular period of time where it became clear to me that I was like on a healing path of ancestral trauma and generational trauma, like because I kept getting this and it was like, wow, okay, that's informing me of something and it's sparking another avenue or a path for me to go down. And so as a psychological tool to me, first and foremost, mirroring back to me what might be going on at any moment in time. And if I'm confused about it, tarot is going to help me understand it and see it and find a way to relate to it, metabolize it, sort out how to orientate myself next. But I also do tarot forecasts, you know, for my clients. I do yearly tarot forecasts, not as like, here's what's going to happen in December of next year, but like as in these might be the energies that are kind of cyclically floating around you for a year. Yeah. And how can you work with those? It's all about like pulling back and going, okay, what can I do with the information I'm receiving? What can I do with this information? And that's where we engage our human selves.
Yeah. I always ask every year on New Year's, you know, what do I need to know for this year? Or what does this year bring? I tend to try to not ask questions of it that are predictive. Yeah. And you discuss the asking of the questions a bit in the book as well, because I think that's really crucial. I usually tell people don't do yes or no questions because those are hard, right? But to reframe them. So how do you approach asking questions of the tarot?
Yeah, talk about ambivalence. If you ask a yes or no question, woo, that'll leave you scratching your head when you draw cards. But refining question asking is such a huge part of this practice. And I say that if we approach this practice in particular and this tool with 100% assumptions that we are in charge of our paths, you know, and our willpower, and, you know, our willpower plays a huge role. And so we have the power of will. And so when you go into question asking, just assume that when you make that assumption and you frame your question, it can be so liberating. Like rather than should I buy this house or should I leave this relationship, what do I need to know about this relationship, or what's hiding from my view that I need to think about in terms of buying a house? If you can reframe the question, so like not what will I ever be happy, what do I need to know that's blocking my sense of joy and happiness? What can enlighten me right now that I'm not seeing that can open a pathway for me to step into. And then sometimes you just get crappy readings. I mean, sometimes sometimes cards come up and you're just like, nope, you're done. Yeah. You're done. You're done. I'm putting you away, shutting you down. We'll try again in a few days. And then, like you had alluded to earlier, like ritual in terms of your tarot practice, coming into your practice with some grounding, not like being in a flurry of frustration and then drawing your tarot deck and being all, what do you think is going to happen if you're putting the intention of frustration and, you know, angst into it? You're probably going to get some mixed things that you don't like.
Yeah, exactly.
Be able to take in.
And I find it really helpful to just that grounding and to help clear the mind so that the frustrations are gone. And I think it's a general good practice to, if you are feeling really frustrated about something, don't do a reading then.
Wait.
But I'm so glad this is actually one of the quotes that I had from your book. So I'm so glad that you just said this. You know, when asking questions of your deck, it is best to assume 100% responsibility for your life choices. And I think that's really important, because if people consider, and I think that ties into how one thinks about tarot. Because if you think about tarot as, you know, this is exactly what's going to happen, that is kind of contrary to free will. And I think it's really important to say, well, no, that's what the cards say now can change.
And to be clear and to like provide a contrast, like that doesn't say assume 100% of your life circumstances.
Right.
It says assume the responsibility of your life choices.
Right.
So like there's a difference between, I think sometimes in the toxic positivity of our, like the new age culture, it can be like everything that's happening in my life is because of me. It's like, no, we're not that powerful. So like I have to distinguish that and like really stress that like you are human just like everyone else, and shit happens, and you are not 100% responsible for your life circumstances. You are 100% responsible for your life choices. And so if you frame your questions with that foundation, that's what opens doors with this tool in ways that it just wouldn't otherwise. It just becomes too rigid and too inflexible then if you're demanding that your deck give you the ultimate answers to everything in your life. You're giving your power over big time. And it just loses its effectiveness. You know, it just loses effectiveness.
Curious here. Let me think here. Oh, I wanted to go back just for a little bit to some of the symbols. And for me personally, you know, I can read the cards kind of intuitively. I've used them for so long and I've done a lot of reading. But what really kind of expanded my reading was actually when I was able to take an approach that was a little bit more logical and rational in a sense. And that's where I started looking at the cards as esoteric flashcards.
I dig that. My God, that's a great book idea. You should write that one. That's a good one. I like that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you're like the fifth or sixth person that told me I need to write a book. So, and I've been thinking about it, and so I'm okay, what can I do? So maybe, and I think I got that phrase from Mark Horn, who wrote a book, Tarot and the Gates of Light, I think it was. He was one of my first guests. But yeah, because I had kind of not been practicing, and for some reason it just hit me. I'm like, I want to know about this like alternative tradition from Western philosophy and spirituality, like Hermeticism and whatnot. And so I remember going down to my local metaphysical bookstore and I just started buying decks because of this. And I find it really helpful, you know, because there's, and I don't think we're going to get into this, but, you know, from the esoteric tradition, there's a lot of like, you know, Kabbalah, you get the astrology and the correspondences. Now, you talk a little bit about the astrological correspondences, and I find those really helpful.
I do too. And because I mean, astrology is like follows a close second to tarot. Tarot is my like number one tool, but astrology came into my life in the early 2000s, and I've been studying, I've been a student ever since, making the correlations between a planetary energy in the card. Yes, absolutely expanded entirely what I was dealing with. And so because I have such a close relationship also with the stars and planets, I'm a cosmic witch, I'm an astrologist, I use that energy throughout my life. Like, heck yeah, I want to know. So like, as in, let's say I draw the devil. Okay, that's another like one of those cards where you're like, you draw it and you're going, oh great, now what am I supposed to do with this? Like, it's heavy, it's intense, it's kind of foreboding. But like, if you remember, you know, okay, the planet Saturn rules the devil card. What does Saturn have to do with? Saturn is, oh, buckle down, responsibility. It's due diligence. It's, you know, the astrological sign is so associated with that card is Capricorn. Oh, I need to kind of take charge of this situation. This is like me embracing some type of authority over a thing that feels intense and foreboding in my life. So okay, so like, yes, getting familiar with the symbols in the cards, yes, like you said, throughout the traditions, Hermeticism, Judaism, there's Egyptian symbolism, you know, like whatever, it adds such a range of depth. And I assert that it's like that's like the advanced tarot enthusiast strategy for learning and studying. And I think this tool can do that. Like, you'll never stop learning. I'm still learning. Right. I don't claim to know everything about the tarot. Yeah. I just don't. I don't think it'll happen. But yeah, expanding in that way adds dimension and can shake you again in another realm, right, like into a deeper understanding and relationship and acceptance with the cards. Yeah.
And I like the deck that I use is a Thoth-based deck. And I love that they have all these correspondences, not just the signs, but, you know, various planets. And that's all based on the decans. And I find that's a really interesting kind of meditation as well, to do that sort of decan walk throughout the year. And so, like, for example, when you said that you were Gemini, one of the first things to pop into my head was, oh, 8, 9, and 10 of swords.
Yep, bingo. You totally get me.
Yeah. Well, do you find that relevant?
I do. And that's why I have a love-hate relationship with swords in general, because because I have such a tight relationship with the air element, just as a being. Like, I embody that whole suit, you know. And I look at those cards and I'm like, yep, there I am again. Oh, yeah. There I am again, doing the thing where I'm flipping the mental gymnastics, or I'm my worst enemy in this moment. And I just know it. I know if I'm dealing with a thing, I'm going to draw some swords. And that reflects to me back, you know, like, okay, remember, you have a lot of air in your chart. Yeah. This is just like we told you before, sit down, gather your thoughts constructively. See where you're standing with those thoughts and see if you can move on to the next thing. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I've tried to do that. I've looked at my natal chart and have done correspondences. It's like, okay, well, what cards then are, you know, okay, here's my rising sign, you know, here's my moon, you know, and sometimes there are some really interesting correspondences that I find. And I always look at those. I'm like, okay, maybe that's like a point of power or something that I need to pay attention to.
Oh my gosh. What you just said is another kind of tactic or strategy that's highlighted or outlined in the book, is to actually come into your deck, not from facing down, but facing the cards.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah.
And like going through it and letting the card come to you that you need to study. But then what you just said, which I love, is like then going into the symbolism and picking it apart and seeing what each thing has for you. Like, it might be a deeper message that comes, that helps you shift or move a block that you're facing in your life. And so I don't approach my practice from a purist standpoint that we have to draw the cards blindly. Yeah. We can look through the card deck, draw a card that represents how you're feeling in the moment. then go to your books, then get out your journal and write things down, like what planetary energy, what are the symbols here? Oh my God.
Yeah, I find that really helpful too. And I was glad that you put that in the book, that you could actually look at them face up and find something that really related. I one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and this is my philosophical background and what I did, but at one point you wrote that the cards challenge us to look deeper at how we embody the wisdom of the cardinal virtues of prudence, temperance, courage, and justice. And I'm all about virtue ethics. That was my doctoral work. So I was wondering if you could maybe speak a little bit more about the cards and virtues.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to tell you what's really fascinating about that is I can remember distinctly the moment where I realized the connection or the intersection between virtues and the tarot. I was sitting in the St. Paul Cathedral. And for those of you that are listening to this that live in Minnesota, go sit in the cathedral. It's open like Monday through Friday. You can go in and just sit there. It's free. And you look up and you can see actual stained glass images of prudence is there. Temperance is there. I'm trying to remember the names of the other ones that are in. There's like five or six that are stained glass. And I sat there and I just started crying. Like I just started sobbing, like, oh my gosh, again, another connecting point between me and like my Christian upbringing and recognizing the merging of all of this wisdom and all of these lessons and all of these things that we've been taught for so long were kind of converging all at once. And so then getting my tarot deck out and being like, oh my gosh, the connection from the virtues to the tarot, oh my Lord, this is amazing. Temperance is here. And developing kind of a deeper spiritual awareness of that, it hit me in such a deep way. I think I kind of missed the boat in what I was learning in my Christian upbringing. But yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. You know, what hit me as soon as you began speaking was this connection between stained glass and tarot. I'm like, oh, yeah. The stained glass images, that's a lot like how tarot is, that there is a message, there's a virtue, but it's not written out for you. It's there in a symbolic image.
We can learn from that. And so like, if you sit with temperance, let's just talk about that one in particular, because it's one that triggers a lot for so many people, either good or not good. But when you're surfacing the virtue within yourself, sitting and looking at the temperance card, it can cause all sorts of interesting reactions, like, oh, it's the moderation, it's middle path, it's taking a beat, it's taking care, it's, you know, not acting with impulse, you know. And so to me, that embodiment makes us just function better in our lives. It causes us to soften a bit and move through our lives. And it's, to me, it's not about Christian guilt. It's not about like, oh, if you don't do these things, you're sinning and burning in hell. It's like, no. It's like, what can we take from the wisdom, from those virtues, embody those things? And let's just say it just makes our life better.
I mean, well, that's the whole thing about virtue is, you know, it's not Christian, you know, it goes all the way back to the classical Greeks, and you find virtues in almost all religious traditions. But with Aristotle, you know, that's who I studied, you know, because he was the one who really kind of fleshed it all out. But, you know, like what you just said, you know, I think that often people think about temperance as being equal to moderation and kind of finding a middle place. But I don't think that way, because with Aristotle, you know, a virtue, I'm going to geek out here. Virtue is always, you know, there are always corresponding vices, right?
Yeah.
And virtue is not the middle point. The virtue may be closer to one of the vices. And what you need then is practical wisdom. You have to think about what's right.
Well,
and that's prudence, right? You know, that's where prudence is. And so it seems to me that one way of reading that temperance card is in the sense of, you know, you need to actually think about what's the appropriate action.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. Yep. Not acting with impulse, which to me is typically the meaning I go to when I read that for anybody. Because in a practical fashion, if we, depending on the scenario, I can say 9 times out of 10 when that card comes up for somebody, they're about to pull the plug or make, you know, a decision that may or may not be, you know, in their best interest.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to see that when you're clouded by, you know, human stuff.
Yeah.
And so temperance or the virtues can cut through, you know, those cards can cut through and help you sort of, like you said, pull back.
Yeah.
What's the appropriate action here?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then my brain also goes to that in like the Thoth deck, it's not temperance, but it's art. And it brings in the alchemical stuff, right?
Oh.
Yeah. So I always mix my decks.
That's awesome.
I always bring them in. I'm like, okay, well, you know, in this one, this is what it means. I want to ask you, I've got a good question here for you. Because you teach tarot and. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really enjoyed about your book is that it's not a, you do go through the major arcana, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of give, you know, what these cards mean for you. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at very specific decks and how it's represented in those decks. But other than that, it's not a, well, this is what this card is and this is what the meaning is. What most people do is, you know, at the very beginning is they rely on the little white books.
Yep.
That come with the deck.
Yep.
And kind of like try to remember. And, you know, there's a virtue to that. But the question I have is, if you were to write a little white book, how would you write it?
Ooh. It would probably be 3 pages total. It would be, it would start with an exercise around grounding. Yeah. And safety. Okay. So I would be like, put all your books away. Get out a journal. Yeah. Do your grounding. Here's an exercise for grounding. And then draw a card and ask these 3 questions. And the 3 questions are, 1, how does this card make you feel? 2, what does this card make you think about? 3, how does this card inform your life right now? Yeah. That's it. I mean, it would probably be 3 pages. Yeah, 3 pages total. God love the little white book. Thank God. And by the way, I have to just say on a side note, if a deck you order does not come with a book, it was probably pirated. So let's not do that. No, make sure your decks that you're ordering have little white books or some type of book with them. But so that's probably what my little book would be. I don't know how I would write it outside of that.
Do you think you would give like some background in terms of like the suits and maybe some of the qualities pertaining
to
the suits?
I can see like the section in here where I talk about the element of each suit, which I think is, if you only memorize these things, have it be that each suit is ace through 10. Each of those numbers takes you through a particular different journey or represent different things in your life that are happening. The suits, which are corresponding with the elements, get that in your brain, get comfortable with that. And when I teach tarot, we lay the suits out in rows on top of one another, and we look at how they compare and contrast through the suit. So I would also probably highlight some exercises with that.
Yeah.
And then, then with the major arcana, it would be about, like, get familiar with the archetypes. Get familiar with what those archetypes are. Because they're aspects of your own psyche that are going to hit or surface at any moment in time. Yeah.
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 That's a
really good question. Nobody's ever asked me that before.
Well, thank you. I'm always kind of curious about it. It's like, you know, because they are useful. The little white books are useful for beginners, but... You know, it's, I like what you said, because it's really forcing the intuitive aspect versus, well, this is what this card, you know, but even sometimes in the little white books, it will give you a variety of things and you're like, well, which one should I pick?
Yeah.
It's
tricky. It's tricky. I feel like one part of our tarot practice is definitely like absorb the knowledge of those that have gone before us, because it's like... amazing and important and wonderful and awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. How many folks have studied and worked with tarot like yourself, you know, for 40 years? You better get on that damn book. And also, like, you know, one part really tapping into our intuition.
Yeah. I know we're getting close to, we're kind of starting to run out of time here, and you may not be able to answer this question. I'm just kind of curious. Sure. Do you remember the very first reading that you did?
Oh, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I can tell you a really funny story, though. I started reading tarot, and the mentors that had crossed my path were like, yeah, just so you know, you kind of got a knack for this, and you need to start doing this professionally. And so they, without my consent, I know that's really bad, but without my consent, they put me in a chiropractic office in West Fargo on Tuesdays, doing Tune-In Tuesdays with Shanda, and put a tip jar out, and then I would just sit there and read cards for people. Yeah. Any of the patients there that wanted to come and sit down with me and hear about tarot, and that's how I got started. So let's just say I sort of took a leap pretty early on in this journey to read for others. Okay. And I'm really glad I did that. Yeah, but no, gosh, I wish I could remember. Oof, that would have been, the late 90s at that point.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just always curious. I always want to ask people. So let me see here if there is... Oh, one of the final questions here. I got a couple more, but story. At one point, and I think this is when you're talking about journaling and kind of doing some free writing, and you noted that you should not just list the card or cards that were drawn, but noticing the emotions. We've already talked about that. But here, consider the story the cards are trying to tell.
Yeah. Ooh, that one gives me goosebumps. You just said that out loud, and I'm like, oh. The cards themselves, when they come together, you know, individually they're informative, but also when they come together, they reveal a story. And the story is interlinked through the patterns that are revealed in the cards, right? Like, what are the numbers here? What is the sequence? What's happening first, next, last? Like reading a novel, like watching a movie, like watching a play. It's revealing something like the universe has a story, or our higher self or our soul is revealing something to us. And because our lives are shaped by our story, tarot is no different. And so if you can really get comfortable also with, like, looking at the story the cards are trying to tell you, it can help you relate more completely to, like, the holistic picture of what's going on in your life at any given moment. It's a story. And it might be just a section or a couple pages or a little chapter, of what's going on. But it's very enlightening to me, using tarot as a storytelling tool.
Yeah, that's how I practice. And I'll tell the cards, I'm just practicing. And I like the, I guess it's called the horseshoe spread. So it's like seven cards. And I'll just to practice. And that's what I do. I'm like, okay, there's a story. What's the story that's being told here? But what also comes to mind is that when you were talking about being able to, or encouraging looking face up, is that it seems to me that if someone doesn't like the story they're currently living, they could actually pull out a card that represents the story they want.
Bingo. Hell yeah. And because we know now, after this long conversation, that we know kind of how, have a better sense of how tarot actually works, which can inform so many different things and shift our conscious reality. It can shift our reality. When we start focusing on the things that we want to bring into our lives, it can start to magically shift our reality. And tarot can help with that too. So I really encourage people to try a bit of both. The type of tarot reading where your cards are face down, but also try the type of reading where you draw the cards that you would love to see be the story of the next phase of your life, the next steps, and get intimate and familiar with them.
And I think your book is a really good introduction for people to relate to tarot in a very different way and to learn tarot in a very different way. And it's chock full of exercises and meditations and visualizations. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in learning to get a copy of the book. So last two questions for you. Number one is, what's coming up for you? What are you working on next?
I was thinking about that when you asked earlier, like, hey, we're going to talk about this at the end of our chat today. And I feel like what I want to nudge people, because I have things ongoing, like really ongoing, I would nudge people to take a look at my events page on my website, shandaparkinson.com. I teach classes ongoing here in the Twin Cities monthly. So psychic development or online classes. I also teach tarot, intermediate and beginning tarot here in the Twin Cities, all around community education buildings. And so you can see me in person or you can catch a class online. But also I love working with people one-on-one. So I developed a program back in 2006 to help people develop their own psychic skills. And so we all have them. I utilize astrology to help me understand what your particular gifts are, how you might receive, how those work, function, operate, and then I kind of hand tailor a program to work with you. And some people don't like learning in groups, and I'm one of them, which is why I wrote these books to begin with. And so if, like, you're going, you know, I really want to learn tarot, I really like tarot, I'm not going to come to your classes because I don't like to sit in a group. We can make a program for you just working together. So I'm super flexible around how to work with people, but I'm going to say that I'm on Facebook. I do weekly Facebook lives. You want to join me on social media. You'll get a lot out of joining me on social media on Facebook and browsing my website, which is full of great freebies and information.
Okay. And on Facebook, it's just under Shanda Parkinson.
Shanda Parkinson, Psychic Intuitive. Yeah. Okay. Instagram is Shanda Parkinson Psychic.
Okay.
And my website is shandaparkinson.com, Shanda, C-H-A-N-D-A, without the R. A lot of people add the R. There's no R.
Okay. All right. Well, I will definitely put links to your website. I'll see if I can get the social media on there as well, but also links for your book for anyone who's interested in purchasing a copy. I think it's a really helpful tool for people who want to learn tarot and to work with it differently. And I'm always appreciative of that, of different approaches to tarot, rather than just, well, here's what this card means and here's what that card means. Really work with it and make it personal.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. I have to say that I was really nervous. I'm super humbled because I've watched several of your episodes, and the folks that you're connecting with are some folks I've been learning with and really admiring for a long time. So I just wanted to thank you for inviting me to be part of the gang.
Oh, of course. You know, that's one of the things I love about this is, and I keep thinking about this now, is that I have a friend who is a pretty new friend who has commented that, you know, you move in really interesting circles. And I just find this as a wonderful opportunity to speak with people. And, you know, I always make a point of reading my guest books. And I know that not every podcast host does that. I'm like, why wouldn't you? If you're going to speak with someone, you know, read their book, have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm kind of like the person who doesn't particularly like group things, and I don't usually typically put myself out there. But I'm finding it's a good challenge, and it's really rewarding. So I just love talking to people, and it's always interesting because sometimes there's like a really good connection, and then sometimes it's like, I don't know, you know, really trying to herd cats or something in the conversation. So I appreciate how easy the conversation was. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And, so much fun. I feel like we could have kept going, and we need to respect time. So
Yeah. Well, I find people will tune out after a while. So I try to keep them, like I said, no longer than 90 minutes or so. So it seemed like we were at a good kind of stopping point.
Good.
But thank you so much. I really appreciated this and enjoyed the conversation, Shanda.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right. You too. And that's a wrap on episode 127 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're a part of my YouTube audience. Now, you don't have to be psychic or know how to read tarot to know what's coming up next. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends, family members, on social media, like and follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the grind. But here's the thing. All of that is really important. Putting this podcast together takes a lot of time and effort. Right now, it's a labor of love. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but if you find any value in this, your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always say, I'm here on the front range doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, psychedelics, and consciousness, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the Rebel Spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your Rebel Spirit.